The prayer hall emptied around me, but I remained prostrate, forehead pressed against the carpet. The Arabic phrases I'd recited since childhood now echoed hollow in my mind. A question formed, one that would have seemed blasphemous just months earlier. Who are you, Lord? Are you Allah, the God of my forefathers? Or are you Jesus? How could the majestic Creator possibly enter this world through birth, suffer humiliation, and die on a cross? Yet another thought haunted me. What if His Majesty matters less to Him than His children do? This wasn't a sudden crisis. It was the culmination of a journey that began with my first breath, when my father whispered the Islamic call to prayer into my newborn ear and led through years of university debates that dismantled everything I thought I knew about God. My story crosses continents and cultures, revealing how the search for truth can lead to destinations we never imagined, even when that truth demands sacrificing everything we hold dear. The Adhan, Islam's call to prayer, was the first sound I heard, whispered by my father at birth. We are Quraishi, descendants of Muhammad's tribe, tracing our lineage to Hazrat Umar, one of Islam's four caliphs. This wasn't heritage, it was destiny. My father joined the U.S. Navy in the 1970s, leaving Pakistan to provide for his family. Constant relocations made friendships nearly impossible, strengthening our family bonds and deepening my religious identity. My parents created a protective bubble, teaching us to see ourselves as Islam's ambassadors. "You will always be seen as a Muslim first," my mother explained. "Your behavior reflects on our entire faith." I recited the Quran in Arabic before understanding its meaning, completing my first full recitation before age 6. Growing up Muslim in America meant navigating conflicting worlds. At home, authority derived from position, not reason. At school, critical thinking was celebrated. This created a third culture identity. I fit perfectly nowhere. The painful realization came when my friend Ben excluded me from a best friend's photo despite our apparent closeness. In Islamic culture, honor and shame drive behavior more than individual moral reasoning. Meeting social expectations matters more than following personal conscience. September 11th intensified these tensions. 3 weeks into my first semester at Old Dominion University, my father called urgently, "Find your sister and come home immediately. They're blaming Muslims." As evidence confirmed the hijackers were Muslim, I struggled reconciling my peaceful understanding of Islam with terrorism committed in its name. I needed someone who would challenge my biases, an intelligent, uncompromising non-Muslim friend willing to engage about what mattered most. I met David Wood at a forensics tournament shortly after 9/11. Despite being physical opposites, I was meticulous about appearance while he preferred casual clothes, we formed a brotherly bond. The starkest contrast emerged later. David was a committed Christian who had spent 5 years studying the Bible. During our first trip together, I was shocked to see David reading a Bible. I challenged him about its corruption, pointing to multiple versions as evidence. David calmly explained that different versions reflected textual criticism, comparing manuscripts to identify changes, not corruption. Most differences were stylistic translation choices, not alterations to the underlying Hebrew or Greek. Our debates intensified. When David challenged me to provide evidence for the Bible's corruption, I struggled. He explained that with texts proliferating rapidly across different regions without central control, no model existed for significant, undetectable alterations. Despite compelling evidence, I resisted acknowledging the gospel's reliability, fearing I would have to admit my parents and teachers were wrong. Our debates culminated in a meeting with Gary Habermas, an expert on Jesus' resurrection. When confronted with the brutal details of Roman crucifixion, the flagrum tearing skin, nails through the median nerve, death by asphyxiation, my defense crumbled. Virtually all scholars consider Jesus' death by crucifixion among the surest facts of history. My next defense was arguing that even if Jesus was resurrected, that didn't make him divine. I challenged David, why would an immortal God need a son? Jesus' humanity, his hunger, thirst, bleeding, and death proved he wasn't divine. David gave me Josh McDowell's More Than a Carpenter, claiming the Bible says Jesus created all things. I devoured the book in hours, checking all biblical references, my first time actually opening a Bible despite having memorized dozens of verses to refute Christianity. While I found many arguments insufficient, some passages from John's Gospel painted Jesus in undeniably divine light. I dismissed John as unreliable, written too late, and differing dramatically from the Synoptic Gospels. Feeling victorious, I accepted David's challenge to read McDowell's more substantial work. To my shock, McDowell pointed to Mark 14:62, where Jesus calls himself the Son of Man sitting at the right hand of power, combining references to Daniel 7:13 and Psalm 110:1, passages describing a divine figure sharing God's sovereignty. Despite my imam's teaching that Son of Man proved Jesus' humanity, Daniel's prophecy actually depicted a divine figure worshipped eternally by all nations. The evidence was overwhelming. Jesus' deity wasn't just in John, but woven throughout all Gospels. Unable to reconcile this with my Islamic beliefs, yet unwilling to deny the evidence, I subconsciously channeled my inner tension into increased Islamic devotion, more fervent prayers, deeper hadith study, greater use of Islamic terminology in daily conversation.
With my Christian objections failing, I turned to strengthening my Islamic faith. I prepared a presentation on Muhammad's prophethood for Mike's apologetics group, emphasizing Muhammad as a man of peace and the Quran's miraculous scientific knowledge. After speaking confidently for 45 minutes, the questions began. Mike asked how I knew Muhammad only fought defensive battles when the Quran contained violent verses. When I explained these verses had specific historical contexts known through hadith, Mike asked the devastating question, "How do you know those hadith are trustworthy?" I admitted they were collected 200 to 250 years after Muhammad's death, which visibly changed the room's atmosphere. Unlike Christians who learn about Jesus directly from the Bible, Muslims receive most information about Muhammad orally, as the Quran contains minimal biographical details. Even the earliest records openly admit to intentional alterations. Ibn Hisham, who transmitted Muhammad's first biography, explicitly states he omitted disgraceful matters and untrustworthy reports. Reading hadith directly, I discovered the Muhammad I'd always known was filtered. In Sahih Bukhari, I found disturbing details. "The angel pressed me so hard that I could not bear it anymore." Muhammad's suicidal depression after these encounters. His statement, "I have been ordered by Allah to fight against people." Accounts of ordering assassinations, beheading over 500 Jewish men and boys, and selling women and children into slavery. These stories contradicted the merciful, peaceful prophet I'd been raised to revere. Having lost confidence in the historical Muhammad, I turned to the Quran as my last hope. For Muslims, the Quran represents what Jesus represents for Christians, the closest thing to an incarnation of Allah and proof of Islam's truth. Muslims defend its divine origin through five arguments: inimitability, fulfilled prophecies, mathematical patterns, scientific truths, and perfect preservation. My confidence shook when I discovered Al-Furqan al-Haq, a Christian book written in Quranic style that effectively answered the challenge that no one could produce anything like it. I dismissed the prophecies as vague and mathematical patterns as unremarkable, leaving me clinging to scientific miracles and perfect preservation. Maurice Boukai's claim that the Quran contained miraculous scientific knowledge became a cornerstone of Muslim outreach. As a medical student, I found serious problems. The Quran describes bones forming first, then being clothed with flesh, contradicting modern embryology where bone and flesh differentiate simultaneously from mesoderm. Most Muslims believe the Quran has remained absolutely unchanged since Muhammad received it. However, Sahih Bukhari revealed troubling facts. Muhammad only dictated orally, sometimes relaying verses differently. After his death, many verses were lost in battle. Abu Bakr collected the Quran from memories and fragments. Uthman later standardized the text and ordered all other materials burned. perfect preservation itself required faith. After 3 years of intellectual wrestling, I finally gave up, not on Islam yet, but on reason itself. I had lived with vibrant confidence, my Islamic beliefs, family, and actions converging into one authentic self. Now I was just a shell, outwardly steadfast, while inwardly drowning in confusion. In a final, desperate attempt, I denied my ability to arrive at objective truth. I wasn't there to know if Jesus claimed to be God, I told David. I'm Muslim. I've always seen the world as a Muslim. Even if Jesus were God, I probably wouldn't be able to know it. What I didn't realize was that the tremendous cost for a Muslim to accept the gospel, immediate ostracism, sacrificing friendships, potential rejection by family, forms part of the knee-jerk reaction against it. I lay prostrate in a Muslim prayer hall, broken before God. Please tell me who you are. Take away what you will. My joy, friends, family, even my life, but let me have you. If it's Islam, show me. If it's Christianity, give me eyes to see. On December 19, 2004, I tearfully pleaded with God. The room went pitch dark. Where there had been a wall, I saw hundreds of glowing crosses. My body paralyzed, time stood still. The vision vanished. God, that doesn't count. I need more. That night, I received a vivid dream with symbols pointing toward Christianity. When I consulted both Christian sources and Ibn Sirin's Muslim dream interpretation book, every symbol aligned. The snake meant questioning one's religion, the lizard, a cruel hidden enemy, the boy, a friend bearing good news, the cricket, a warrior bringing joy. Through summer 2005, I desperately resisted the gospel, traveling to mosques across Europe with my father, seeking answers but finding none. The night before starting my second year of medical school, I savored what I knew might be the last loving moments with my family. The next day, unable to compose myself through tears, I grabbed my Quran and study Bible. The Quran offered nothing, just laws from the 7th century depicting a God of conditional concern. But when I opened the Bible to Matthew, I found, "Blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted." These words electrified my dead heart. God would bless me for mourning, for hungering after righteousness rather than achieving it? When I reached Matthew 10:32-33 about acknowledging Jesus before others, my heart sank. Acknowledging him meant destroying my family. As if in conversation with me, Jesus answered through subsequent verses, "I did not come to bring peace, but a sword. Anyone who loves their father or mother more than me is not worthy of me." On August 24, 2005, at 3 in the morning, I prayed, "I submit that Jesus Christ is Lord of heaven and earth. He came to this world to die for my sins, proving his lordship by rising from the dead. I am a sinner, and I need him for redemption. Christ, I accept you into my life." My family's reaction was devastating. They felt utterly betrayed, yet continued to love me. For nearly 2 years, my mother cried every time we met. They didn't attend my wedding, and when I chose ministry over medicine, they temporarily cut communication. Though my first year as a Christian was unimaginably difficult, it was also the most powerful time of my life. All suffering is worth it to follow Jesus. He is that amazing. We often inherit our beliefs from family and culture without question because they form our identity's foundation. But when we dare to examine these beliefs critically, we may discover that truth lies beyond tradition's boundaries. My conversion wasn't about rejecting Islam, but embracing Jesus, not about leaving my family, but finding my true father.